Good morning, Harry.
Morning, Frank.
Yes, Harry, go ahead.
I've been listening to your radio show this morning and some of the understandable anger that's coming from a lot of people. But I think a lot of that anger has been reflected in the Brexit vote. And I think this attack is designed to coincide with the upcoming election in Britain, designed to drive people apart and beat that anger so that the Brexiteers and the more right-wing elements take control in Britain.
Do you really feel, Harry, that people who voted for Brexit would in some way have to take responsibility? And I mean, like, it's a long piece of thread, the argument you're making. I'm not talking about direct. I'm not talking about any form of direct responsibility. Let me phrase this maybe differently. Yeah, no, I'll continue to phrase it the way it was, that there would be in some way on a long piece of thread linked to the response, the actions, that they would be in some way responsible for triggering the actions. That's the best way to put it. That someone who wants to leave the European Union would be in some way linked to triggering the action of that terrorist last night.
No, absolutely not. What I was trying to say is that I believe that a big element of the Brexit vote was driven by fear. And that fear, in many ways, reflects the way people vote. I believe they voted. You know, I mean, I personally didn't vote in the thing, but I think a big element in mainland UK are afraid of Europe, they're afraid of these attacks, quite understandably. But I think it was driven by that. And when these terrorists can affect people to such an extent, then effectively they're winning.
So you feel that the people are fearful of the terrorists who would be influenced by the Islamic faith? You feel that those who want an independent United Kingdom are simply fearful. They don't. It's not because they in some way want to divorce themselves from the any form of Muslim influence.
I don't think it was a fear of Muslim influence. I think it was a fear of not having control over their own borders and who could come into the country and free movement of unvetted people. I think that's what drove the thing mostly.
Yeah, well, let me put it another way. If we had voted to stay in the European Union, do you still think that killer would have acted last night?
Very probably would have done, but I think the timing of it is designed to coincide with the general election. Nobody could have predicted 2 months ago that there was going to be a general election called. So I think that this thing was probably designed to coincide with that.
Do you think they think like that, or is it not just done to kill people who are of a Western society, people who enjoy a pop concert, young girls who might like being out in a T-shirt and shorts as opposed to being controlled by an evil influence? And I'm not talking about young women who choose to dress as Muslim women do. I'm talking about women who are totally controlled by an ethos of a law, of a culture that is taken to the extreme and then twisted and delivers the product of the bomber last night, who has an absolute hatred for young women.
I think ultimately these actions are designed to cause the maximum amount of damage, the maximum amount of shock and horror, and to attack children at a pop concert. Normal people can't rationalise that. People filled with hate and driven by hate will do these things because they know that will cause the maximum amount of horror and fear. I'm sitting here this morning and I'm genuinely distressed. I can see the faces of some of these kids that are missing, or listed as missing. And it's unbelievable.
It is unbelievable. It is heartbreaking to see their faces on screens. Thomas very often contacts this program, and he's a point to make about it. Morning, Thomas.
Morning, Frank. First of all, my thoughts are with not only my family. I have a lot of family in Manchester. So obviously our panic last night was, were they at the concert? Thankfully they weren't, but they have friends that were. My thoughts obviously with the friends and everybody in Manchester. I think people should maybe try and keep an eye on social media, Frank. There's a message on one of my relatives' pages there that I tweeted yourself in there. I know it mightn't look okay for people to tweet things from here, but obviously there's thousands and thousands and thousands of people follow people on Twitter. There's a lot of children still in hotels and guest houses and people's houses that haven't got their parents yet, and their parents haven't got the hold of them yet. Obviously they'll be panicking at the minute, all of them. So obviously they don't know where their parents are, and the parents don't know where their children are. They don't know if there's anything happened to them. They could be in hospital. So I think people should maybe keep an eye on stuff like that there, and the media should also be putting these numbers and contact details out for the people.
Yes, it is a very good point. We've been doing that, and we'll do that again, because there is no doubt people are worried and people are concerned. Thomas, thank you for that. The lines are so busy at the minute. I'm just trying to free up some of them even as we speak here. Let me speak to Tony, who's on this one. Good morning, Tony.
Morning, Frank. How you going?
Very well, Tony. You were listening to Harry, who was speaking to us earlier.
A load of drivel about Brexit and
yeah, unfortunately, your line isn't good, Tony. Just just hold your phone steady there and give me that again, please.
I say I'm talking a load of drivel about Brexit in some way being responsible for Muslims blowing themselves up, and he didn't even vote in the election, and now he comes on pontificating, you know, about. We should be taking these people in. We should be part of the EU. The EU that are forcing us to take these people. The EU that are going to fine us for not taking these people. And, I mean, if you drive through Calais at 3 o'clock in the morning, as I often do, you'll see what sort of people these are that are looking to come into this country.
Well, it's around Calais, a lot of destitute people, a lot of people who are doing their very best to find a better life for themselves. The chances are, Tony, the guy who did that last night may have been in this country from the DNR he was born.
Who told you they were destitute people in Calais?
Well, there are destitute people who are there, who are looking for a better life.
There are people there who will offer you £3,000 to take them into the UK. That doesn't sound destitute to me.
Yes, there are people, absolutely, who will be breaking every law in the land and every law in Europe to try and get to Europe. But we can't castigate all the people who are in Calais and describe them as some form of threat to society.
Have you ever seen the people in Calais, Frank?
Well, I've followed quite a bit of it on the news. I've liaised with charities who've gone across to help them. And I've listened to lorry drivers, or you're possibly a lorry driver like yourself, who've been plagued
right,
by
yeah.
them.
Yeah, oh, absolutely plagued by them. And they run about with the best of phones, the best of tracksuits. They leave clothes that are donated to them. They just leave them lying about the place, you know. And the EU are going to now fine you if you don't take those people in. And that's the sort of organisation we want to still be a part of.
But do you accept, Tony, that there is a possibility that the guy who killed those innocent children last night in Manchester is British born and bred?
Oh, I have no doubt about that. But he's Muslim born and bred, Frank. And Islam, in my view, is not a religion. It's a cult. It's a cult that follow the teachings of a man who was born in the 8th century, who advocates killing people who are not of the same faith, who advocates the domineering of women, who his words, the Quran is actually made up 70% of how to control your family and in particular how to control your women.
Tony, do you understand how insulting that is to the good Muslim people who are listening to this program, who live here in Belfast? And how would you like if they analysed the Bible and took every line of the Bible literally and described it as retribution and murder and general retaliation for all that happens in the world?
Well, do you not think there are people who take the Bible literally, who look at its every word, and they don't go about killing people? I mean,
Tony, hold on a second. Let me stop you there. People have been killed in Britain by Christians than by Muslims.
Where did you get that fact from?
That is a simple fact, because most terrorist activity that has happened down the years in the United Kingdom has been carried out by people who claim to be Christians.
Yeah, down the years, Frank. We've only had these Muslims. I know we've had these Muslims in the country. We used to call them
Tony, I think you'll find that you've had Muslims in the country since, I don't know what age you are, but from before you were born and well before I was born.
Well, I don't think so, Frank. I don't think so. I was born in the 1950s.
Well, I reckon we've had a Muslim population in the United Kingdom from back about then, easily back about then.
Yeah, easily back about then, 50 years, 60 years, whatever we're talking about.
And in those 50 or 60 years, more people have died at the hands of Christian terrorists than Muslim terrorists.
Well, I have no doubt that,
Well, your line isn't great at the minute, but I know we know where you're coming from on it. You've no time for people of the Islamic faith, or indeed those who would be coming in from overseas to live in the United Kingdom. I'm going to say good morning to a gentleman called Thomas who's on this line. Morning, Thomas.
Morning, Frank. How are you?
You have a point to make about Donald Trump.
Yes, I'll keep it brief. Frank, the hypocrisy of it all, you know. There's Donald Priest begging for world peace, and he's over in the Arab Emirates, and he's in Israel, and he's everywhere, trying to please everybody, but he's selling arms. Not every Muslim's a terrorist, right? But he's selling arms to the Saudi Arabians, right? Like, say, what, £30 billion arms deal, right? If you're going to have peace in the world, why sell arms? I don't see the logic in that, you know?
But is he not calling on governments around the world to unite, to wipe out the threat that comes from the likes of the individual who killed the children in Manchester last night?
Of course, Frank, and Megan Dolan. I really, really regret Megan Dolan to go to all their families. But the fact is, this is down to governments. This is an arms race, North Korea. The words, like, being honest with you, what's the point when the governments, you know, leaders of governments are selling arms to each other and all the rest of it, and then the next thing, they're you know, gunning about tragedies and this and that and the other.
Okay. Well, I suppose the arms dealing has to do with world peace, or does it? A lot of you feel it doesn't. Robert's got a point. Good morning, Robert, who is on line 4. Morning, Robert.
Hello, Frank. How are you?
Very well, Robert. Go ahead.
No, just obviously about yesterday's atrocity last day, team. It's the Muslim religion. Now, I know religion's a hot potato, but these people are just hell-bent on killing. Now, I have no problem if they want to worship Allah, the Prophet Muhammad, do it 5-6 times a day. But what is their end game in this?
But Robert, is it not more important to say that the terrorists who are within the Muslim community are hell-bent on killing, as opposed to saying Muslims are hell-bent on killing?
Yes, I agree with you there. But like, what's their end game? What's all this killing going to achieve? Like the IRA, okay, they want the United Ireland. We can see what they were striving for news, right? But what's the Muslim going to take over the world, or what are they doing? If you go into Birmingham, you know, your man Abu Hamza, he was preaching to 200 out in the middle of the street. They're all sitting down saying about killing Westerners, and the police were powerless to arrest them. They finally did get arrested, but that's just, he's sitting there inciting all these people to go and do this on British soil.
Well, there are many who are inciting, and yes, he has been in, certainly in sharp focus over recent years. They want to form this caliphate. They want to create an environment whereby there is the strictest of strict law that comes from their understanding of the Quran. That would be the argument and point they would make, and they would like it to be a worldwide initiative. But that's not what ordinary, decent, good Muslim people are calling for.
I know, but it takes a bit of understanding, Frank. Like, we are not allowed to go over to their country and practice what we believe in. There are certain countries over there, I think it's, you can't even show signs of a faction, you know, with your wife.
Yes, there certainly are very strict rules and regulations, and it's particularly strict even in countries like Saudi Arabia and countries that are seen as being friendly to the West. There is absolutely no doubt about that, and there are questions that the people who are of the Islamic faith need to answer as well. But we cannot target everyone, as some people have been on this program this morning. We cannot target people, everyone of the Muslim faith, with being associated with what I described as the subhuman who did the attack on Manchester last night.
Oh, I know that there, but we respect their rules in their country. I think they should respect our rules in our country. Like, yeah. You go into Birmingham, there's mosques and everything getting built. You wouldn't know what country you're in.
Yes, but surely we're tolerable enough to accept the presence of a mosque or a synagogue or a cathedral or a Catholic chapel. Surely we are able to accept in 2017 a civilization that allows religions, people of faith, to live cheek by jowl.
Like for like, Frank, you wouldn't see a Gherkin or anything like that over in Saudi Arabia or Abu Dhabi or whatever.
Well, there is no doubt that the Christian faith is persecuted in some areas, but there are also, and it needs to be said, there's also a presence of Christianity in other places as well. But I'm not arguing with you. Without doubt, the Christianity has been persecuted in many Muslim countries. Alan is in this line. Alan, good morning.
All right, Frank, what about you?
Very good, Alan.
Frank, I'll call a couple of things there. Had a conversation with you a while ago about Donald Trump. And Donald Trump says, he's all said that I was mad and he was mad. Donald Trump says that in order to try and deter this from happening, he says, now these bombers don't care about themselves. He says, so maybe you have to look at people who they do care about, i.e. their families. If you were to take their families and jail them, jail the family members of one of these suicide bombers, that might deter the next one. Because they don't care about themselves, they're blowing themselves up, you know. And secondly...
But just on that, Alan, just what form of justice would that be? Like, if you stop to think what you've just said, could you rewind to the Troubles here and some of the people who carried out dastardly acts against citizens in our society? Just imagine that their brother or their uncle or their mother had to go to jail because they couldn't be caught or because they got killed while they were doing it. Would you seriously have contemplated, like, interning relatives of people who were deemed to be guilty of an atrocity?
But you're doing the Troubles here, Frank. Well, you did it or not, you were still interned.
Yes,
there were people interned for nothing anyway.
Yes, but is this what you're saying, that you're now going to intern not only those, and you suggested that they maybe had been killed while they were doing it. So if they were killed while they were doing it, there is a suggestion that they were involved. You're going to intern their relatives.
But as a deterrent to stop the next one doing it, they don't care about themselves, right?
Yeah, but Alan, have you any understanding of what internment? But what did internment do here? And you're going to encourage. You're going to broaden it now.
Well, here, there's no normal policing way to fight this. You can't fight these people. There's no way that, you know, and many Muslim people have actually phoned up and said, oh, such and such is doing this and such is doing that. I don't hear anybody getting caught for all this stuff through other Muslims phoning up. Certainly, I tell you here, not all Muslims are all the same. But here, I don't hear too many phoning up the cops and telling them here, he's dodgy or he's iffy or he's up to something there. As an attorney to stop the next one from doing it, if they know that their family members might go to jail for a long time under their actions, than here. It might save a life.
Alan, it's a very interesting theory. I have to say, having a memory of internment in Northern Ireland and how it acted as a recruiting sergeant for the IRA, you're now suggesting that not only we intern people who may or may not be suspects, but you're going to intern their family members as well. Anyone that, you know, where do you draw the line on that? Like, internment full stop has to be wrong. But now you're going to broaden it out where if you're down the same street, you get interned. Let me speak to Geordie. You could just imagine how many young, angry, Muslim, Islamic individuals would join organisations if their families were being interned. At this present moment in time, they have no intention of doing it. Gosh, Alan, I've never heard such drivel. Let me speak to Geordie. Morning, Geordie.
Good morning, Frank.
Yes, Geordie.
Frank, firstly, just want to say, like everyone else, just how tragic the events in Manchester have been. So many people dead. Hundreds of people will be affected for the remainder of their lives. Victims, families, and so forth. And we're all looking at it this morning. Each side and all sides of the community here in Northern Ireland are looking at it, and we are all of the same opinion. No justification, totally unnecessary, achieved nothing. However, Frank, a few years ago, people were looking at events in this country that were equally as tragic, events that were carried out by both sides in the conflict, and we're about to go to another election. And again, we're going to vote orange and green because we don't know how to do anything else. Can we not take something from this to move forward for the better of everybody in this society and see just how tragic terrorism, these sort of atrocities are? They achieve nothing. People get hurt. People carry scars for the rest of their lives, their families, their communities, and so forth. You know, 20 years ago, Frank, the people of England looked at the Northern Ireland news or at their own news and they've seen the events in this country. You know, we have now taken a massive step away from this. And can this not serve as a lesson for the people in this country here? Get their act together. Get on with it. There are small things that the guys up in Stormont are debating about. They're falling out about. And they're refusing to sit together and discuss it and work things out in a reasonable fashion. They threw the toys out of the cot and the forces to go back to the polls probably after the next election. Things aren't going to change here. We're still going to get on like a lot of, what would you say, unreasonable people.
Right, Geordie, let me ask you a question on the back of what has been an articulate delivery of your analysis of the situation in Northern Ireland at the moment.
Yes.
We are where we are in 2017, and most people, I know people won't 100% agree with me, but most people will feel we're in a better place in 2017 than we were in 1977 or 1987 or maybe even 1997. So we have a better place. And part of that was down to people agreeing to talk, people agreeing to liaise, and people agreeing to make some form of change in their stance. If we are going to resolve the issue that involves that person last night who killed those innocent children not being mimicked by another one in a month's time or in a year's time or in 5 years' time or a series of them, if we're going to stop those atrocities, if we're going to get the message across to ISIS or whoever is the driving force behind that atrocity, at some point, do we have to accept that we sit down and talk to them?
Frank, that's an excellent point, and it's a very difficult point to address. However, if you don't talk to your enemy, you will never make any headway. However, the fundamentalists within Islam do not the Western nation, Christianity, has any credibility. We are, in their eyes, viewed as infidel. They are fighting a jihad, a holy war. We aren't worthy for them to speak to. Now, I heard your points earlier about the ordinary, decent Muslim people, of which I know some, and I believe that they are very, very genuine people. However, the people, the minority within Islam who are carrying out these attacks, Frank, it'll not matter what our society says to them. They will not give it any credibility. They are beyond reason. They have taken their message from their religious leaders, from their scriptures, and basically what they are doing, they believe they are 100% justified in doing so. It is endorsed by Allah. This is in their belief. It is endorsed by Allah, and it's going to take them to a better place. It's going to leave the world a better place. So why bother to tell people who you're going to do this on? Because they aren't worthy of ISIS attention. As well as that, Frank, you see a guy who's not afraid to die. As you said, they're queuing up, almost queuing up, to carry out these atrocities. How can you threaten that person? How can you do something, say something, or threaten to do something to act as a deterrent to that person? I don't think it's possible, Frank.
Okay, Jordy, I'm going to have to leave it there, but thank you for your analysis indeed. And of course, we are talking about a minority within the Muslim faith whose minds are polluted in the way that Jordy has described. 90333105 is our main number. Families, they're desperately searching for their loved ones who've been missing since the blast in Manchester. They've been posting photos on social media hoping that someone can help. Among them are 8-year-old Safi Rose Russos, Olivia Campbell, who's 15, and 17-year-old Chloe Rutherford, and her boyfriend Liam Curry. It's absolutely heartbreaking. There is no question about it.
I was speaking to a surgeon inside the hospital here this morning who told me that, you know, as we all feared, a number of children are among the injured in this attack. And he said that there are children currently in operating theatres. And he described how their parents themselves injured are sitting outside those operating theatres, not receiving treatment themselves because they just want to hear news. They're just desperate to hear that their children come out of surgery and are okay. We've got the Manchester Royal Infirmary here and also Manchester Children's Hospital. So this is where a number of those injured were brought. We know that this is where overnight a number of people came to try to find friends, relatives that they haven't been able to get in touch with since the attack. You know, we've seen the appeals on social media, but people actually coming to hospitals in person to see if they can find people that they can't get hold of. Really upsetting scenes as well overnight. Families coming out and saying that they had actually spoken to families who'd been given the very worst news, that in fact their loved ones hadn't survived the attack. So really desperate scenes inside this hospital. And we know that all routine surgery here today has been cancelled so that the surgeons and the medics can just focus on treating those injured in this horrific attack. Also, we're being told anybody who has an appointment to donate blood in the next few days is being urged to keep that appointment. We have seen queues forming outside blood donor centres in Manchester. Now, the official line is that people don't need to rush out and do that, that there is enough at the moment, but that people should keep the appointments, particularly we're told people who have blood type O negative. So I think, you know, anybody who wants to do anything to help, that seems to be one thing that people in Manchester are going out and doing this morning.
That's Becky Johnson there from Sky, who's outside Manchester's Royal Infirmary. Let me speak to John, who's on this line. Morning, John.
Good morning, Frank. It's just a point that I'd like to take up on one of your last callers here regarding, he was talking about the Muslims and those who follow Islam in general. They won't speak to people from the Western world because they see us all as infidels. How many from the Islamic and Muslim community have rang your show today to condemn that act?
I have to say, John, And, you know, the obvious answer is there's no one from the Islamic or the Muslim faith has been in contact with us this morning that we are aware of. We don't question people when they come on and say, what religion are you, before they contribute to the show. However, having said that, it is unlikely that we've had a call at any point this morning from anyone who is a Muslim. Now, we have a limited number of people within the community who are of the Muslim faith. That limited number, only some of them percentage-wise would be listening to the programme. And as a result of the small percentage that you would have of people within the community who are of the Muslim faith, they may be listening, they may be feeling that they're shocked and horrified by what happened. But like with a lot of Christian people or Jewish people or people of no faith who may be listening to the programme, they may not wish to take part in a radio phone-in. And so it's not a scientific way of analysing whether or not those who live locally who are of the Muslim faith are being critical or not in relation to last night.
I appreciate that. I believe I have a lot of tolerance and, you know, belief that the people who live here within the Muslim community and follow Islam are peaceful and right-thinking people and good living people. But if the fundamentalists won't listen to the people from the Western world, surely the people who follow Islam peacefully should try to get in contact with those guys and try to talk sense to them.
John, the bomber last night, I don't know who was killed and who was injured, but the bomber last night would happily have killed Muslim children who may have been at the concert, would happily have killed Muslims who were in the Twin Towers, would happily have killed Muslims who were on the underground in London or who were at the concert in Paris. These people do not care who they kill. This is an attack on the Muslim faith, as it is an attack on children in Manchester.
That's why I said he was a fundamentalist. He wasn't a right-thinking person. Obviously, he was a demon, if you ask me. But at the same time, there has to be some sort of, you know, getting together with these people, getting some sort of talking shops or whatever you want to call it. There has to be some sort of initiation to try and stop it or to try to get to the bottom of why they're doing it. And if they're not going to talk to us, i.e. the Western world, who are they going to talk to if they don't listen to their own people either?
Okay, so you're saying that the people of a Muslim faith need to be more vocal on this. They have been vocal in the past. I have no doubt they'll be vocal over the next 12 hours as well. I have no doubt whatsoever that they will. But maybe they need to be louder about it. It's a valid point, John. It is a valid point.